counting down.
We're back on the record.
EJ and Jean and John speak for a little bit, and how would be the best way to protect Leon from this. This man has already got $40,000 of Leon's money. He is planning on making his retirement on this program. And it was decided amongst them, and then calls made, and it was decided that Leon would be dropped from this case, as this case being conspirator with them. I don't mean dropped as far as not paying him. Let's work out some other. The Supreme Court of Nevada is making a decision whether the agreement made was valid or invalid. Mr. Abbott has held out that you cannot pay Mr. Fort. You have to pay Abbott. How in the world do we get around this? And Mr. Abbey said, well, yes, we can. We can put forth a motion to drop Mr. Fort as a defendant in this conspiracy part of this. So this was decided to be done. And Mr. Williams went back to the office to bring up these papers. Now, this was not something for shock effect or we're going to surprise you or anything. The first opportunity after resuming the depositions, this was presented to Mr. Abbott, and he was speechless. He didn't know what to do. He would have to look into it. He would have to see the papers. He would have to do all this. Later, and quite a bit of imbibing, the subject got around to corporations and management and the fact that records had been dispersed to protect them. Mr. Green, and now we know that Mr. Abbott, through all of those nice connections he had set up the investigations against the Institute so that no one would ever know, and all they've got to do is come in and confiscate your records. They don't even have to make an explanation. The hoods, the SWAT team comes in, takes your computers, takes your records, takes everything. So it was decided by the Institute to protect everybody that those records would be dispersed, so that it would not be a loss if they came and took the stuff in the files. Other shiftings were made for protection of asset. And somehow, through all of this badgering, EJ was able to protect your interests in not divulging one name. Not one corporation, and he's sitting there looking at corporation names that would blow your mind. Cosmic Concepts, Starships Unlimited, I mean, they'd chosen like 10 of the most disgusting, insulting corporation names that they could pick. Well, at this point, Mr. Abbott says, I don't believe I'm going to allow dismissal of this case or dropping of Mr. I have to protect these people. At Leon's expense, you would do that. And that was asked him, because they couldn't keep Dorma under control. No matter how they tried to shut her up, every time Abbott opened his mouth, she would respond. Neither one had any business making any statements. And the poor girl couldn't get everything on record. That's too bad. Dorma also found out that every time she walked out the door, Mr. Abbott went with her, even to the ladies' room. Followed her around. So she would wait until it was an interesting question that might affect something. She would get up and go outside, and the entire thing would all fall to pieces. Mr. Horton asks incredibly long, tedious, compound questions until by the time he gets the question out, there's no way to answer it. And by then, there's no way to remember it, including him. So hours are being taken up. So Mr. Abbott spent part of his time out going over old political escapades with Dorma out in the front office. At Leon's expense. When this was brought up the last day, I don't want to get ahead of myself. She's saying I'm going to miss the most fun part, the most insulting, the most disgraceful part of the whole thing. The day has gone on, and now it is evening. Everybody's tired, and still we're going to haggle over her. So she sits down, and we get through the oath, and Mr. Williams got up to leave. And Dorma says, I want you here, Mark. And he got all, I want you here. So he leans over to Mr. Horton, and they both look their lizard look. And he gets up anyway to go. And she said, I want you here, Mark, for this. And Mr. Horton leans up and said, he is my assistant, and he has to be elsewhere. So Mark couldn't stand it. And they had it all planned. So as now we sit down and we settle back, he licks his lips and he leans forward and he says, greetings, Commander. And she said, I will not stay for this. You have ridiculed, you have insulted. I will not go through this disrespect. So Mr. Abbott says, well, I apologize for yesterday. I said, you have no reason to apologize. She said, I will not stay for this. He leans up again, and he acts as if he's going to just ask questions now. All right, that was not too wise. I'll go back. Who is under oath here? Doris Ecker. Who has been ordered to court or to this deposition? Doris Ecker. And can you believe he did it again? Greetings, Commander. He said, that's it. I will not stay for this kind of disrespect and abuse. And the attorney got up and said, this deposition is ended. And for them, it was. Mr. Abbott tried again to get it on the record, an apology. And she wheeled around and said, there is no apology necessary. I have a sense of humor, but I will not put up with this. And they left. So back on to the judge's phone line. And they left. Literally. And yet it was worked out that if the attorneys could find her rather than have them come back up there to finish this, because it had an hour and a half the day before when they refused and even offered to pay for the hour at Leon's expense. After the judge said, start her deposition, they still said they had plans and they wanted it in a certain order. And the judge said, then you will pay for the time that lapses. Oh, they were happy to do that because they weren't sure that Mr. Ecker was ever going to show up. Well, he did, but they had an hour and a half at least where they were told by the judge to start her deposition and didn't. But now, she has also walked out early, and they're not through. They can't do a phone deposition because of needing documents, of which Mark Williams had supplied like six boxes, file-size boxes. Find it interesting to note possibly that this was Wednesday and they already had a copy of Tuesday's contact. Morning came And these ones had come back to California. But they didn't want to leave their people stranded. So they called in and said that they were on their way home, but they had decided to stay over, couldn't make it home that late, and needed to unwind a bit from this. And this was presented back to them. Gene Dixon had already gone back to the Sacramento area, and they had set up that if they could be found, there would be, the deposition would continue at 8 in the morning. Well, they could not be found, but here they were, and they were willing to come back. And since all ones should be on call for the morning, it was only 9:30 at the very latest. So if they were already available, why could they not just do it now? Everybody could be there within 45 minutes. Well, now Mr. Horton was unavailable. They couldn't find him anywhere. Well, they finally decided they better find him, and he better show up. So the third day began to be more congenial, and this time Dorma said to him, "We know Mr. Williams as Rick Weber." And there is just silence. When you are talking about also known as, who is this man with you? Again, he said, this is Dr. Williams. Oh, is this M.Day, Ph.D., whatever. I want some identification, our attorney says. He is my assistant. So this has been repeated now twice. He's my assistant. That makes him very high in the level of the office structure, wouldn't you say? Dorma said again, we know him as Rick Weber. And there is an attempt on the part of Day Williams to find out who this is. We need, are there other names? We need more identification. And Mr. Horton shut it off just like a guillotine. It is enough that he is my assistant and he is staying. These lovely people went right on, and Mr. Horton said, well, I didn't notice that it was so disagreeable to you when I greeted you in that same manner. Greetings, Commander, on my radio program that you were on. Dorma says, I have never, ever been on your radio program. Ever. Oh, yes, you were. Day Williams says, you better be ready to produce a tape or some proof. We're being set up now for lack of any capability of memory. Will you be able to, do you think, recognize voices and things on tape? So he starts off with the tape that was made in the other room about the USNP case the day of the signature of Walter Russell. It starts off. Precious EJ even put the wrong date on there, as he so often does, and has to correct it. So there's starts off quite humorously. Yes, I recognize that, I recognize that. And well, it sounds like Commander to me. So Mr. Mark Williams goes outside and locates the spot on this tape. You see, this is his duty. This is his talent. And he comes back in, and it is that section, just that section, dealing with that name. Now, did you do that? Doris says, yes, I remember that, but I never did see it that day. I'm not even sure I've ever seen it. And I certainly never saw a comparison of it. But the inference is that it is so perfect that you would not know the difference, would you? Well, I don't know if I would or wouldn't. I have nothing to compare it with. Already making the established fact that she would have been the one to sign both the author's name and George Green's name to the whole harmless agreements. That he wrote in the first place. That was insulting enough. Now we get on. And I, rather than let this drag out longer where Patricia's going to fall off her chair, is now they've established that somehow this awful woman forges signatures and has forged the ones on the note that George Green used to borrow the $150,000. Every document. And now guess what, Patricia? They produce 7 pages of George Green's signed documents that they say they got from originals. Look at these. Is it all right if I call you Mrs. Ecker? Yeah, that's my name. It's right on my driver's license. 7 pages of George Green's signature on John Schreffer's stolen notes. Seven pages. Now they're going to use Patricia because she's supposed to have some originals. How did she get them? Oh, but when did she get them? Their plan is to take these, ridicule for a while, and ask Mrs. Ecker on the witness stand in a court of law, can you tell the difference in these signatures? Well, of course not. He signed both of them. How do you know? Well, the facts are, precious ones, that there's no way to tell, is there? Did Patricia Young sign his name? Did Eleanor sign his name, George Green? Why is it important? Because these were stolen and hidden. Because George Green didn't want any responsibility to Schreffer's. More than that, it showed him as trustee, which means he could no longer deny being an officer and a director of the Phoenix Institute. And George still tells everybody that he's got 2 insiders. One of them is Bud Clark and one of them is Patricia Young, feeding me constant information. So we know it's valid. And he's got somebody stealing Horton's private legal documents for him. So it's valid. Well, Dorma did have a pretty good answer for that. She said, well, when I do anything, the energy is present to do it. That's number one. Number two, I clear my space. And no dark energies are allowed in my space. That means Mr. Green would never be there. Unequivocally, no. Mr. Green or someone else signed those documents. Now, this will be the first time that they know that the Institute has another set of at least four of those, quote, original documents. Because, quite frankly, everybody smiled at each other, shook their head, and did not mention them. What kind of a game is this? And Doris brought it back again. I was never on your radio program. Never. And he said, oh, yes, you were. Mr. Day Williams said, you better be producing a tape. Oh, I have it. Mark Williams has mocked up a tape of Dave Horton on his radio program. He has asked appropriate questions, and Mark Williams has taken other tapes from other radio programs like Sam Russell and dubbed them in. So there is going to be a tape done by a professional. There hardly anybody will be able to tell the difference. You see, they have all of the tapes from the meetings. They have all of the papers. They will have all of this by evening, I hope. I hope. I know that ones of you who have felt me a total loss, a total Satan, I hope that you can understand how badly you have been used. You could have done something for your nation. Why in the world would the Eckers do any more? The $350,000 in gold coins were never theirs, would never be theirs, and shall never be theirs. Why should they do one more thing? They've lost their home, they've lost everything they own. And they take this kind of ridicule and abuse until you cannot even have a trial that can be fair. And Mr. Green's favorite oath is a kol nidre. So they better spell it right. And this is going to destroy two attorneys in their late years that could make a contribution to this nation. And one young man that has thieved from his employer to serve this Satan in Montana. George Green is even denying that he sent out those packets from Bozeman, Montana. He says that Enz's relatives sent them out. Now, why would they bother over $350,000? Well, let's go through a little exercise. We're talking about 1,000 ounces of gold. Four boxes sent. Rick received one or two signed for it. George hid them. This was bad enough because they were sent very specifically for the Institute, at which point money would have been borrowed against them, more gold bought. So now maybe by the time these four boxes of gold were handled properly, you'd probably have 2,000 ounces. Because I'm going to tell everybody in this room again that the Institute has been handled properly. George did not want to buy the gold in the amount to cover, but EJ insisted on it. And if any of you have ever dealt with banks, you know that they demanded that collateral be available. So if it had been handled properly, there would be at least 2,000 ounces of gold. And at the time it was purchased, it was worth approximately, just adding up the inventory, asking the rarities dealers to give a price of the inventory of those items, it was estimated about 347,000 versus the 350,000 that George was holding and took and buried in Nevada. That is nothing. $350,000 is not worth a quarrel about, because more than that will have been spent in attorney's fees and pure emotional garbage. But let us remember something. There was offered a settlement, but George insisted on keeping the gold and hung up on Mr. Dixon, trying to work out an arrangement where USMP could be... Well, my goodness, Mr. Green has now promised his lawyers and Mark Williams and other participants, he says Patricia Young is included, in disbursement of some of the gold, which will grow in value as only Mr. Green can present to you. The very notes are made against the gold doubling. Everybody who participates, remember that? That was Mr. Green's plan. It would pay off, pay the notes, pay everything when it doubled. That would bring it up at that point to around 800 an ounce. Just this last week, just the 1,000 ounces of gold that Dave Overton presented to the Institute and is held by Mr. Green went up in value from $350,000 to $400,000, didn't it? Gold got up to $398.90 on about Thursday. It's fallen off a little now. What does Mr. Green do these days? He goes out and he preaches, buy gold, get gold, get gold. It's going to go to 2,000. You know it cannot settle for less than 1,200 an ounce, people. That's $1.2 million on just Overton's inventory. It is fully expected, and Mr. Green knows it and counts on it, banks on it, going to $5,000 to $8,000 an ounce. That is known in the community of economics. Now you are moving, aren't you? From $5 million to $8 million, this little bunch of gold is worth. So Mr. Abbott thought he could retire. Leon Fort certainly thought he could retire. Mr. Horton thinks he can retire. George Green knows he's a big dog. So the little four boxes of gold sitting with Judge Gamble is not $350,000 in Federal Reserve notes. To George Green, it represents $8 to $10 million. Do you have a right to give away your collateral? I don't think so. And yet one would still be willing to settle with Mr. Green and pay the attorney's fees, get rid of the hell from US&P that he agreed. He made an agreement, and he made an agreement with them on the basis of going to get that $350,000 in gold. So, Tim, don't worry. You know, we're going to get that money out of the Institute because the Eckers control it. And we're going to get all this gold. And I'll put that university on the map. Well, he's not going to want to settle for not having that gold, will he? So what do you offer him? These fees? It's nothing, is it? And yet you can't walk into that courtroom without being ridiculed out of it. Who around Minden, after reading that last, much less the whole bunch they're running every day, will not have heard of this silly trial? Because being talked about everywhere. I mean, after all, Judge Gamble, while they're having depositions, Judge Gamble can't even carry on his court work for having to answer conference calls about this case. He's sick of it. And when it comes down to Mr. Green's deposition, they're going to refuse to even have his deposition. And it's on the other case. They're going to prove that Doris Ecker signed that note and all those hold harmless and all of those other things. I don't know how she's going to be blamed for sounding like her when she should be sounding like a man. And what's going to happen to Mark Williams out of all of this? Well, I'll tell you one thing that's going to happen is those tapes are going to be clarified with the attorney, and that court is going to be notified. I do not believe the answer is to send them back to Mark Williams. But you see, what was going to happen is they were going to spring this one. You even had the master tapes. And I swear all this on the golden heat tree. But you'll be laughed out of court. So you have to think about these things. Mr. Fort was contacted, I believe, by Mr. Abbott because he came back into the room. Mr. Horton had to go. There will be a continuation of Dorma's harassment on Monday morning on the phone. Now, I don't know how Mr. Horton is going to prove to her that he is him. Think about it. On the other hand, Mr. Horton sits at the crossroads of his career, either which way this goes, because now the value of that is to the extent that it cannot be allowed not to be questioned. This represents, in Mr. Green's own calculations, at least $5 million. If $350,000 was not enough for the law, $5 million ought to be. On the other hand, is not worth it today. What do you do? But do you let this man destroy all of you? You knew it would be this way. I told you it would be this way. Rick had a good point. There are some tapes that you ones should go back and listen to. We should gather together to listen to them. It is exactly on schedule. Exactly the way we said it would be. And you thought you were big enough and strong enough to take it. And Norma still thinks she's not. Well, what are the alternatives? Well, that's what gets you. There aren't any alternatives. There are always alternatives, and quitting is one of them. Quitting is one of them. So what you're saying to me, when there are no alternatives and you keep going, is that quitting was not one of the alternatives. And I thank you for that. And there have been other beloved and blessed beings that have kept you able to go on. And I daresn't, because they will be contacted and drummed and badgered. I will not name their names. But they will know when this is over that they have done it. They have made it possible for you to make it. And all of that may go to George Green. And we may shut down the paper, and the Phoenix Institute may go dormant. And the farm may go. The projects you have started may go. And you still will have won. But it's a bitter, bitter cup, isn't it? And for who is it bitter? To them only if they lose their gold. To you simply because you will feel you failed. To you, either way, it should be a very sweet cup. And these attorneys that copped out, if you will, oh, Mr. Dickey got rid of them. And attorney X and Y and Z. Oh. The attorneys for this institute can go on truth. They know that when they go in there, they are dealing in truth. And maybe the difference is the opposition knows it's dealing in lies. But which will the jury decide? And depending on in your non-constitutional government and judicial system, it will depend on the orders given to the jury by the judge. And what Mr. Green and Mrs. Green have done is conjure up the most incredible set of books and reports based on nothing for their expenses, until now their expenses show well over $500,000 that they lost in this little escapade. How in the world could they lose it? They never put it in. They had all the inventory. They got all the money. They went to Carson City, Nevada, after telling you ones they were going to send you $1,200 a month at least to run the contact. And what did they do? They didn't send anything, but they took all the subscription money with them. This is fair. They were going to leave all the office furniture. They took it with them. They were going to leave the computers. They took them. They not only took them, they gave Dr. Coleman the ones he had of the Institute. And they stripped the files. And since Mr. Green has been gone, the stock ledger of the Phoenix Institute has not been seen. Now, did he also plan to issue himself all of the stock? Has he? If the books are missing and you can't find them, you won't know. On the other hand, it wouldn't be too wise of him to do that, would it? Because it's going to show a tremendous deficit. But what he's trying to do is push it into receivership. And the reason that Eckers went is because if the case was dismissed, as Judge Gamble said it would be, you be there or it is dismissed. It sounds like, oh, well, Mr. Green will get $350,000 in gold coins, and to hell with it, I'm tired of this game. No. Back would come hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees against the Institute. and it would be forced into receivership to study its records. And Mr. Green has stated at that point it would go into forced bankruptcy. So you either settle or you go to battle. Because my people here see no alternative but to continue the struggle. Now, I want to tell you, before we take a break, that I asked the board, and specifically EJ, to get a cake, and Mark, congratulations on it. I believe we've done that. I want you to begin to get creative in your mind. And when I say creative, I want you to start thinking. I didn't say make up lies, stories, games. I want you thinking. Doris Ecker has no claim to a singular conduit. To me or to mind or to brains. It is time you fight for your own property. And you only have to do it through truth. There doesn't have to be name calling. There doesn't have to be battle with guns. You do it on truth. And you stand for the property in which you have invested yourselves. Gold be damned. It is the damnation of your place. This is your investment. And your mission had better be remembered. Some of you who thought this mission included making a bundle of money better get thee from us. It is based on projects in a little valley that can be used as an example. Or if you are beaten down, it will be nothing, but a remnant will get through. It must be done. That is my mission, to bring the word and get that remnant through. I don't have to go out there and solve your political problems. Those things will be left to the Ron Jacksons, the McLams, and you. It's going to get harder and harder and harder to even have a group meeting like this. In fact, I may never have another meeting like this because you may not come back. Word has been sent in that you are the next Waco. Well, forget that one, because that one came from Gunther Rusbacher, who also said this is a CIA proprietary. But you better be paying attention, because Janet Reno has now